The tiny Gulf nation of Kuwait hasn't seen the type of violence and political unrest that's plagued Egypt for the past 12 months. But that's not to say all is quiet in Kuwait. Election results out today show a big surprise there. The Islamist-led opposition has taken control of Kuwait's parliament, apparently on a wave of public anger over government corruption. Ellen Lapson is president of the Stimson Center, a think tank in Washington. Her research focuses on security issues in the Gulf region. Ellen, put these elections in context for us. Why were they held, and how significant is it that a bloc of Islamist-led opposition candidates has taken control now?
These elections were held because the emir suspended the parliament in November based on a real conflict that emerged between opposition members of parliament who called for the ouster of the prime minister. The prime minister did step down. He had to resign over allegations of corruption, and they called for snap elections. But we need to bear in mind that Kuwait has been having elections since 1963. Of the countries of the Gulf that include Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait is considered the politically most advanced on the road to true democracy. It still has a strong monarchy, but the parliament has been a platform for other interest groups of the society to be able to convey their views. It's a very feisty parliament. They even get into fisticuffs from time to time, but it is a country where different interest groups and citizens are able to express themselves, as they did when they called for the resignation of the prime minister.
Mm-hmm. So a feisty parliament in a monarchy, how much power does that parliament actually have?
Well, that's evolved over the years. They do make adjustments to their constitution and to the rule of law. They only allowed women to vote 5 years in 2005. So it's now 7 years ago that women were given the vote. And yet the mood in the country appears to be more socially conservative. And the last parliament had four women in it. And based on the election results this week, there will be no women in the new parliament. So not everything goes in a linear trajectory. There are zigs and zags.
So what changes are likely to occur now that a majority of the parliament is opposed to the country's ruling family?
Well, I think we'll probably see more difficult debates on things like American troop presence in the country. Just a few years ago, the issue was private oil companies. You know, how much investment or ownership was Kuwait going to permit private oil companies from having? Kuwait is still a significant exporter of oil. And while the royal family might have been willing to make arrangements with oil companies, the parliament wanted to question that based on their interpretation of Kuwaiti sovereignty. So you could imagine some lively debates about those very vital issues of foreign troops, the role of non-Kuwaiti entities in managing and developing the oil reserves, things like that.
As you know, life is pretty good for Kuwaitis. I mean, they've got a cradle-to-grave welfare system. Public sector jobs are almost a given. How long can Kuwaitis expect that to be the norm?
Well, Kuwait will have to manage its resources and do more to diversify its economy. It has become a bit of a finance center. It provides financial services. It's a country that has a relatively stable population, a homogeneous country demographically, although there are both Shia and Sunnis there, but it does not have any huge ethnic or sectarian divisions. So it has a very good chance of a stable future.
Ellen Lapson, president of the Stimson Center in Washington. She also serves on the State Department's Foreign Affairs Policy Board. Ellen, thank you very much.
You're welcome.